Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is Now or Never, and it is Feedback Friday. There's a lot of things that I, you know, want to give you or want to go through, but what I think it's really important that I empower, that giving you the information and what we just covered this past week really lays out that there's no evidence, there's absolutely no evidence that America was this bastion of racism. Now, as Thomas Sowell points out, the way slavery was done in America, there's always racism. Go to China, go to Japan, you know, immigrate to those other nations and see how open and welcoming they are. Now, there are European nations, granted, European nations, you can, you know, some of them you can go to and you'll be warmly received. But the rest of the cultures of the world are not too receptive to outsiders. And as a matter of fact, when we look at some of the crap or the propaganda that they post, and I'll give you a good example, and I've talked about this before. There's this example of a runner in a race who actually has this, you know, overwhelming advantage to win the race, where they don't even have to struggle or even exert anything, that they are going to win ahead of everybody else, because everybody else that came here, regardless of circumstances, right? In other words, if you're on a team that has the ability to do something that, you know, actually perform well, and you win your particular race, you have created an advantage at the next race and so forth. When we look at that scenario, show me how that applies to only America. How does that not apply to going to any country, period? Unless you have a lot of money and resources when you travel, if you go somewhere with nothing but the clothes on your back, then you're going to struggle and you're going to fight and you're going to have an opportunity, hopefully, to survive. The only place, and the reason why there are so many people that want to die coming to America, is this is the only place where you actually have the freedom of that opportunity. You don't have a caste system. You don't have systems that have been designed to actually make it hard for you to get a toehold, you know, in their culture and in their world. So when we look at, you know, how they portray that, like, oh, you know, it is so disadvantaged. No, it's not. It is human nature. As a matter of fact, even if you look within a country of all of the people, and the specifically the people that came over on the Mayflower, or the people that came over on any immigration ship from England or the UK, Britain, and you look at the different families and how their education, the skills, and those things that they had, you know, there were people that had disadvantages and there were people that had advantages. Those people that rised above their disadvantages obviously became successful. Those people who failed to live up to or failed to, you know, be able to succeed using their advantages because they could have been a jerk and everybody just hated them. As a matter of fact, I already told you, and I think I mentioned this in, and maybe I don't mention it in a petition, but when you look at the Dutch colony that tried to get started in New Amsterdam, the establishment of New Amsterdam in New York, the reason the people of that colony, that small settlement, didn't want to actually fight to defend New Amsterdam was because their leader was a jerk. And so it was assimilated, and the crown of England basically established that area as New York instead of allowing it to be established as New Amsterdam. So let's dive into, you know, what I really want to talk about, because what I want to talk about is the best offense is a good defense. And so what we need to do is we need to kind of cover a few things. But again, this being Feedback Friday, let me go back to one of the things, because last week I played some songs that were indicative of how the entertainment industry was swimming in the idea of the opportunity to become rich and famous, to where the pressures from the labels, from the establishment, in getting them to write songs that created a perverted paradigm regarding our environment, climate change, all of that. These things are not new. Go all the way back to ancient Greece. They were worried about Mother Earth, Gaia, way back then. And it's still, you know, I mean, oh, well, we've got 20 years before we die. And we're at a point where we really believe, we're so arrogant that we really believe that we can kill everything. Yeah, if we launch a nuclear attack, probably. Nuclear attack will probably kill everything if we launched every single one of them. I believe we've got enough weapons and warheads to actually cause a lot of damage. And oh, by the way, if you hear a dog barking in the background, that dog is actually okay. She's just not happy. Anyway, but the show must go on. So let me dive more into this concept of these three artists. And I think I clearly covered that the first two, Grand Funk, Loneliness was the song, and the other one was 10 Years After with I'd Love to Change the World. And those two groups, and at that point in time, they were incentivized. There had to have been some incentives, because people just don't start doing something unless it's popular. And maybe the label said, hey, if you write songs about the environment, you're going to sell more songs. Now, as I looked at the charts, as I looked at the pop charts back in those days, Edgar Winters, because I've talked about this before, Save the Planet, that song never hit the top 100. I'd Love to Change the World actually did a pretty good job, but Loneliness, that was not a song that really went very far. But when this counter-revolution moved and matured to a point, when Roger Waters and The Who came out with their, you know, this big monumental album, double record set, The Wall. It was their first, and truly, even though they had themes and so forth, this was like Tommy's The Who or Genesis's The Lamb Lies Down, a concept album that basically kept one story alive. Jethro Tull's Thick as a Brick. There was a lot of different albums that did that, almost like an opera, right? And so when they did that, Roger Waters chose to actually drive this narrative of the evil establishment and how they just kill people and everything else, that we don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. Now, look at what's happened, because that generation has been so hands-off. Now look at the generation today with children in the education system. They're fighting to get control back. What the heck happened? All of the subliminal messaging, whatever you want to say, or this programming, this indoctrination, this browbeating that continued and continued and continued. Obviously, it was pretty effective, wasn't it? Ta-da! Anyway, so they know that, and they take advantage of that. Here's the point. When we move forward, and I said, I believe I've mentioned this, we absolutely need to get people to start blasting that song. You know, boom boxes, you know, and portable music was something kind of, you know, really big back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Show me today when you see protests or you see people arriving where, you know, maybe at a concert, but unless you're piping that music in from somewhere. But and a good case in point, my wife was just looking to replace one of her 70s, you know, bass boost and boom box. And you can't find those things anymore because everybody has the convenience of this little phone that they can monitor you on, and they track everything you do. And this is why they want everybody to have that thing. Everybody. They're all big tech, government. They're all working together to help your life become better based on their standards. I even mentioned this before. When you look at my website, why is my website always marked as not secure? Because I'm not going to conform to what Google is demanding. Google has been walking and working, and big tech has been walking and working us down this path to where they have absolute control. They know who everybody is, and if you're wanted, they can come and get you. If you're a revolutionary to what they want, they can shut you down. They can censor you. We're living in the Orwellian world of 1984. And that's only because we're allowing this crap to happen. So there, you need to start picking battle cries. This is why I have fanfare for the common man. Because that goes really way back. But I believe today with a lot of people, especially, you know, when we realize how the education system is only weaponizing our children against us and against themselves. So I'm going to dive into this. But again, the best defense is having a direct and deliberate offense and a good offense. Now, the only way to do that, and let's first focus on our children. The only way to do that is to have direct and deliberate conversations with our children. That is your offensive. Not only with conversations, but you need to actually reach out to them and not, you know, in their teens. You need to start when they're informative. So you got little kids, you need to start having direct and deliberate conversations about people who aren't with the family, who aren't a part of the family. Your teachers, when you go to school, they're going to be really nice and they're going to do all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, after that year that you're in that teacher's classroom, they're gone. You're dead to them. There is no lasting binding ties to any of these people that are going to influence you. The only people that really care about what happens to you, and we're talking about your children, what happens to them, is you. The only people that lose sleep at night, whether they're going to succeed, whether they're going to do anything good in their life, whether they're going to get over a cold, is you. You have to be far more proactive. It was proven. They knew going in that Sunday school, your Sunday school, would not be adequate. But people were lazy enough that they go, well, take your kids to Sunday school, and that's all you need. And they knew that their Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday school would overwhelm what they received in their Sunday school. This is why you as a parent need to bring this home, and you need to make, you know, your house every day a spiritual school. It's a spiritual classroom where your children are always learning and always expanding. So you need to do this at a young age, or if they're not at a young age, you need to start doing this now. And you need to constantly reinforce what you're doing. You have to start providing them with actual knowledge on things that they're not learning so that they can actually understand, wow, why are they not teaching me this and they're teaching me this other crap? One of the things you need to start teaching your kids, and start teaching them at a younger age, and as young as possible, teach them critical thinking. Teach them the theories and concepts, fundamental concepts of economics. And, you know, a child will actually get and understand those things. I saw a video where a child was told, they were given a marshmallow, and they was told that if they could sit and hold on to that marshmallow for 10 minutes, they would get another marshmallow. And so they had a few kids sitting there, and one kid ate his, and another one ate, and there was a little girl, I think, that didn't, and she kept that marshmallow, and they came back in, and they go, oh, you still have your marshmallow, and they gave her another marshmallow. She was the only one that got the second one. They said, now you can go ahead and eat your marshmallows if you want. And that drove that lesson home. You can do that with your children. Getting children to start understanding not to waste things, to preserve things, to reward, and the reward is interest. Teaching them the valuable lesson that fools pay interest, wise men earn it. And so how can you make interest out of things that aren't like cash or working with banks or working, you know, in those types of capacities of exchanges and transactions? Well, by developing them, developing their skills, developing their knowledge, because when they understand how to do something, then all of a sudden they've gained self-sufficiency in that one thing, changing their oil, doing things for themselves. The value of labor, this is another thing you need to teach your children. You need to teach them the value of labor and self-sufficiency, not to be dependent on the labor of others. When a child or a person becomes dependent on the baker to eat bread, when they become dependent on all of these aspects in life, then this makes them a slave and or tools to those who provide for them. And this COVID, this last COVID runaround, when they shut everything down, this only proved how we were all tools. Life was great when we were able to make the standard transactions, but you take away those transactions for things you need and you should be able to do for yourself, but you can't. You don't have the tools. You don't have the resources. You can't make your own bread. Then you'll be the first one to starve. And they know this and they understand. Teach them to recognize. Teach your children to recognize the different tools of manipulation. Flattery is one of those. A quid pro quo, getting somebody to do something for you so that they'll, do something for me and I'll do something for you. Or getting them to hold a mark. Or they're sitting there waiting and they come, hey, I'll do anything if you take care of this problem. Yeah, okay, I'll come back and get you later. Don't ever teach them never to put themselves into that position. Emotionally based learning. You need to teach them to recognize emotionally based learning and how the exploitation of feelings creates bad education. Because when we actually look at the facts, when we look at the details, then most of the stuff that they teach does not stand up. They'll show a dying seal or something terrible. And and they get the kids to be all sad. Well, I don't want that to happen. And then they present the level of information to manipulate your kids. So we actually have to be on guard. We have to start teaching them. And again, the best defense is a good offense. You have to lead in teaching your children. But more importantly, if you're only worried about your children, then you're teaching them a bad lesson. We have to actually teach our children to actually get engaged and to be leaders in these aspects of taking on wrongdoers. In other words, when things aren't going right in the education system, you need to be out there holding them accountable. You may not be in a situation. I think that today homeschooling is available for everybody. And I honestly believe you need to be involved, but you do not stop. Nullifying education does not work. What you're doing is you're not participating. You're going into this other type of education system. And some of that is actually you're being seeded with very similar curriculum. Unless you're actually being very guarded and overlooking the curriculum itself, most people, that it doesn't suffice. It will not suffice. You actually have to start holding the local education system accountable, the state education system, and the national education system. They have no authority to be involved in this stuff. And so we actually need to get the states to have a real honest conversation. So moving on. Now, again, we're talking about the best defense is a good offense. And so we actually have to start teaching our kids how to, and what we do to attack this bad stuff that's going on. In other words, if it's education, if it is, you know, the environment with the chemtrails, what have you. If we're not being the example to our kids, and as a matter of fact, a really sad lesson I've actually seen is where a parent had done a bad job in tending to their parent. And what they basically did was they taught their children how unimportant taking care of your elders is. And so I saw and have seen parents that have done a poor job in providing for their parents, teaching their children to basically don't worry about me, don't take care of me, because that's what I'm showing you. You're showing them firsthand not to care. And so they're surprised when all of a sudden, when they, you know, when their health goes and so forth, their kids are nowhere to be found. Be careful what you teach your children. Be careful the example you provide. Now, the best offense against these things that are happening, well, we have different paths, and we've talked about these paths. We've talked about using the party as a path to attack what's going on. The reason the party has failed is because they do not. There is no accountability with the party by basically having employee reviews when they look at their politicians and they go, okay, you got elected by using our name, but you're doing all of these bad things. You know, we're coming after you. We're going to hold you accountable. We're going to flunk you. We're going to fire you. That doesn't happen. We got to look at the relationship. Who is the employer in this relationship? The party should be the employer, but technically, we, the people, are the employers. So I'm going to hold on to that. So we realize that the party will always fail us because they don't care about we, the people. They care about their money, their positions, and their agendas. And so that's what we get when we actually bank on the party for actually doing. Now, we can get in there if we can take the party on, but I am here to tell you, unless you change the paradigm of that party, that it actually embraces full accountability, gets rid of gets rid of these secret agendas and actually has full transparency, that it is all focused on compliance to the Constitution. If you do that, you are on the way to actually obsolete the necessity of the party. Because when people get involved in a party like that, it is tantamount to we the people holding public servants accountable. That's why parties, when you look at their platforms, it's a bunch of platitudes, and it basically is lipstick on a pig, where we actually see that they have no accountability. There's all of these other agendas, and it's a bunch of corruption, and that's basically because money's involved. We've seen how the courts are absolutely corrupt. As a matter of fact, you cannot, so get a little excited. So when you look at the matter, the subject matter, the issue at hand, keep in mind your court system that you created at the federal level, its jurisdiction is limited to only those things arising under that Constitution. It has no, their doors cannot receive. They do this because they've convinced you they can. We have to hold them accountable. That door needs to stay shut when CO2 comes knocking, when life comes knocking, when these, you know, social issues come knocking. You have no jurisdiction over those things. They had no jurisdiction, and folks, you may not like this. The Supreme Court has no jurisdiction on how states run their elections, other than those things arising under the Constitution, that states cannot use poll taxes. They cannot use race to keep people from voting. They can't use gender or actually sex from voting. And they can't use age or 18 and older, all people. But the one thing that they can actually and ensure that the states are doing, but they don't, is only U.S. citizens. If you look at all those amendments, every single one of them requires they to be U.S. citizens to vote. They must be a U.S. citizen. Anyway, When we come back, I'm going to close on the courts and keep going down this path on these paths.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, I had to think twice about, because I was rushing to get that all out before I started talking over myself in the promo. And yeah, we're going to cover the paths. Are, you know, it's relevant to get, you know, to talk about the path forward in going through these paths. I know it sounded redundant, but anyway, and a good author tries to avoid those things, but when I start rushing, nobody thinks well, and nobody acts well when they are rushing. And that's why I always use that Seinfeld episode where Jerry Seinfeld is trying to unlock all these doors where they're pretending that these evil marauders are going to come and harm them. Hurry, Jerry, hurry! And, you know, he's focused on opening each of the locks to get in, to get away from the marauders. Anyway, that's what we have to do. We have to be focused. We cannot allow ourselves to be distracted. As soon as we get distracted, and what happens is, you know, you've got this time constraint that's actually collapsing very quickly to say what you need to say. But so sorry for saying paths twice, but it was absolutely appropriate. Anyway. So the courts are corrupt and have subverted our common law system. As a matter of fact, when we talk about, well, if the Supreme Court can't hear these cases, and technically, when we look at your state court, you should, and we should have actually made limitations on the state court, that the state can only basically get involved in these cases, and that's how it should be. When we enumerate powers, even though they go well outside the enumerated powers, they have no authority to do that. So the only cases that your state court should actually hear are only those matters that are within the Constitution. But every state constitution failed to actually clarify that the authority of the court, of the state court, basically its jurisdiction is based on those things arising under that constitution, period. They are limited powers. So when you create a limited power for your legislature and a limited power for your executive, because he can't execute laws that aren't laws, then it would only come to reason that your court cannot look at cases that are not within those powers. But because we didn't understand, we've allowed them to slip out. We've allowed the federal government to slip out, even though the brilliance, or I should say the divine hand of providence, clearly ensured that it was stipulated in that federal constitution. So we do have some cleanup to do. But don't assume, or don't think that their assumption that they can take on any case is accurate. We have delegated power constitutions. We do not have general power constitutions. If you make general powers in your constitution over healthcare, or make a general power over something, then you've really screwed up. And you need to retract those things. But the only way we're going to fix all of this, this really comes down to the only way to fix all of this is you have to start at your county and you have to prepare your county and educate enough of the people. Now, there are 3,000 some odd counties. The number eludes me, but there are 3,000 some odd counties. When you look at all 3,000 counties creating these committees that are going to actually have to discover which constitution to go through, when you look at the committees that we're calling to be formed and what they have to do, and we identify, you know, the process, excuse me, we identify that process, and then at the very end of this, maybe we need to seed into these county committees the fact that they need to discover whether they actually have established a constitution in establishing their county government. If they haven't, then they need to have their county commissioners call upon a convention for a constitutional convention for your county, so you can actually formally create and delegate your county government. We the people establish governments. You really need to read Why Counties Matter Most. I can't tell you how important. I go because I don't want to tell you that piece of work, that work of mine is so brilliant. I can tell you this, that when I sit down and write, it is based on inspiration. It is not really, and many times I find myself making this assertion. It's a hypothesis. I get this feeling of a hypothesis. And then as I start diving down into it, I find that that inspiration, that inspired hypothesis was spot on. The concept of an audit, spot on. As I start discovering all the source documents, every single hypothesis that has come to me that I've been blessed with, I don't want you to think that, you know, I'm creating this like an artist. This is a direct relationship from the divine hand of providence, just like the framers. And I constantly ask myself, why do I receive such blessings? And as much as this sounds like I'm bragging, I'm not. I'm here to serve. This is why we don't take money. And this is why we're actually here and we work. And I spend a lot of time and effort to where I know there are people that are very concerned about my health. And I know there's a lot. I'm a very rich man. I'm rich by the people who I love and who love me. And I can only thank you for the support and everything that you've done. I can only ask you to seek to do more, to try to squeeze more. And I only live the example of doing everything that I would expect you to do because I do it myself. I'm telling you, I stretch myself thin all the time. And I know there's a lot of people that go, you know, hey, you got to start taking care of yourself. And I'm blessed. That's all I can say. I can just tell you that I'm blessed. And if you want to receive blessings, seek, ask, knock, and you'll receive. That's all I can say. But let me move forward. We've covered the courts and how corrupt they are. We've also, and I don't want to go over this into the nth degree, but the CONCON and the thought of creating amendments to the Constitution when the Constitution isn't even the problem. I mean, they have no clue, these idiots. Mark Levin calling for a constitutional convention makes him an idiot. Glenn Beck, an idiot. All of these people that think an Article 5 convention will actually solve the problem. Give me the evidence that our problem that is coming from our federal government has anything to do with that Constitution. And when I say that Constitution, I'm talking about the one that was written in 1787 and ratified by the states, and every single amendment every single amendment. None of the problems we have are really coming from any of those amendments. But we're going to get into a better offensive, and we're going to talk about two amendments when I'm all done here. Nullification, I already talked about this with the schooling and educating your children. Nullifying the education system by homeschooling does not fix the problem. I proved that. You still have to interpose. You still have to engage and arrest the evil, because it's not that your kid isn't being weaponized. It's that all of the other children are being weaponized, and they're out to kill us. They're out there. They've becoming useful idiots and tools for the as people call them, the evil Satan or what have you, this evil plan. Anyway, the sovereign citizen movement is not a way forward. As a matter of fact, all that does is it takes you out. It keeps you from being able to engage. Who has the right to petition? Who has the right to demand their rights? Only citizens do. So when you go down the path of either becoming a sovereign citizen or you start playing around with jural assemblies, why is a jural assembly a problem? Why are these assemblies a problem? Because if you create an assembly, if you're calling this a new government, you have actually created a shadow government. We have a constitutional government, and your county representatives, your legislators, commissioners, supervisors, whatever you call them, those people you elect to represent you at that county legislative body, those people have the authority to create these committees. They have the authority to form a committee that requires you take an oath to actually do very specific things. This is exactly why they did it back when they had the authority under the British Crown. The concept of the people being able to rise and create shadow governments or these committees, these assemblies, went away when we got the Constitution. Even though it wasn't written down, it is clear that what we have in our government and how we interface our government is right there in the Constitution. Everything else was wiped away. The British monarchy and those things that came with it, the doctrine of magistrates, was wiped away. We created a whole new form of government. We created three branches instead of a single magistrate. Back in the Continental Congress, we had a single magistrate because Continental Congress was a single head. It was an entity, and it contained all of the executive, judiciary, as well as the legislative. They basically severed it. They divided it into three specific branches, and then they gave it very specific power that was enumerated within that Constitution. Now, let me go over revolutions. Revolutions like the counterculture revolution never preserves liberty. It destroys it, and it always destroys the established laws. Why would anybody think that, you know, arming yourself so that we can just fight a revolution is the way to go? That is a failed, and it doesn't interpose. We're a civil society. They gave us a civil government. We have the ability to use the Constitution as our weapon, not weapons of deadly force. The deadly force we have is the law of the land. We can actually destroy politicians, decimating them for the remainder of their life, that they can never become politicians again. That's baked in the Constitution now. The 14th Amendment gives us that. Everything that you're being told is bad about that Constitution is probably a part of a big, elaborate lie. Everybody that tells you that the 14th Amendment is a perversion of the Constitution, they're lying to you. Tell them to give you the evidence, not some diatribe in Congress in 1967, not the people that spoke negatively that were trying to get it to fail. Look at how the proponents spoke about that 14th Amendment and what it was to do. And as they worked through all of those issues, that thing got pounded out. And it was very clear that the divine hand of providence, as far as I see this, the same divine hand of providence had his hand in that 14th Amendment. It happened, my friends, in 2 months. In 2 months, it made it through both houses and went out to the states for ratification. That was even faster than the Constitution itself. And this is one of the reasons why I'm going through the proceedings of the Constitutional Convention. So you can actually see the hearts and minds of these people. They weren't what you're being told that they were. They weren't a bunch of racists. They were actually trying to frame and form a government. I already pointed out there were guys there that they didn't have anything good to say about the people. Even Madison thought that the people were problematic, but he said we still have to create the system to serve them so that they can actually have the luxury of being protected and actually engage in it and become a part of it. Folks, it's time to start manning up. It's time to start womaning up. It's time to adult up, pull up our britches, and start doing our job. This actually points to the real offensive tool, interposition. Now, paths not taken never bear fruit. The paths that we have taken, we've taken the party path, the court, we've taken, you know, the concept of amending the Constitution. And everybody that is going down this sovereign citizen general assembly, show me the fruit of these paths. Not one has made anything better. Have we restored prayer in school? If you want to have prayer in school, if you want your school to, if you live in a good Christian area, can you have prayer in school? No. Because the minority is actually killing the majority. And that's how it's happened. So, and they actually did that by redefining and perverting the Constitution. Why counties matter most actually goes through this. But bottom line, we are being led away from interposing on our government because it will bear fruit. The only reason that all of these paths are such a conversation is because they serve one thing. They serve the utter destruction of liberty and this constitutional republic. Show me how any of these paths, the party, the court, amendments, nullification, sovereign citizen, and revolution, show me how any of those paths will restore and put us right back on the path that the framers gave us. The only path that does that is interposition. And so we also have to talk about the two things. So as we start using petitions, as we start actually getting in the dark red counties and the dark red states, these good people, these good patriots to actually stand up, we need to actually create I don't want to call it a good distraction, but we need to create a fear in those people who are sitting there believing that they're comfortable, believing that, you know, they can't be touched, they're untouchable. The two things that we can do to rock their world, first and foremost, is the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment can be rescinded. This is the only amendment that has ever been formally rescinded by a state. In other words, and I've got an article on this in my constitutional articles page, go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to constitutional articles. It's a couple buttons down, the menu's on the right side. Click on that and find the 17th Amendment, rescinding the 17th Amendment. Read that article because in that article I prove that what ended up happening in 2010 set precedents. What this means, folks, is that every state that is not happy with the outcome or the effect of the 17th Amendment can actually rescind their position and actually undo their ratification. How? In 2010, who was the vice president of the United States in 2010? And actually, this probably happened a little bit before then, but in 2008, Obama and the dolt Joe Biden was elected. And I should call him the nefarious Biden, or not the nefarious Biden, the nefarious Obama and the dolt Joe Biden, those two were elected. And so in 2009, when they took positions into these, you know, these sacred halls and went to defile our government, Joe Biden realized, or maybe he made a point. I don't think he was smart enough to realize, but I think he goes, hey, you know, I noticed that the 17th Amendment was rejected by the state of Delaware. And I believe you can find the article where he actually poked Delaware in the eye. Hey, you're a progressive state. This is terrible that you've actually rejected this. You need to change your position and ratify it. And that's what they did. And it was formally accepted by the federal government. If the federal government allows you to change your position on a constitution. Now, why is this important? Because the 14th Amendment states, actually, there were three states that tried to change their position. Oregon was one of them. I think Ohio might have been another. I don't know what all three of them are, but I could tell you if I looked it up. Anyway. They ratified it, and then they came back and said, hey, we don't like how this is, you know, being implemented or what have you. And or the first, you know, first hindsight being 2020, they tried to unring the bell. The federal government says, you can't. Once you've ratified it, that's it. There's no going back. And so bottom line, and as I look at it, I need to do this because I need to actually prove this. Because when we go through the 14th Amendment and all of that, as a matter of fact, doggone it, I need to find that. When I go through the ratification and the arguments for the ratification of the 14th Amendment, you'll actually find that we actually ratified that well ahead of needing Tennessee, because Tennessee was one of the states. And you know what? What I may need to do, because as I'm looking at it, I don't have it readily available. I'll have to pull this up. So next Feedback Friday, I'm actually going to walk through the states and when they ratified. Now, I'm telling you, the Tennessee ratified kind of early because they wanted to get protected from the debt that they had under the Civil War. Many of the southern states were strapped with debt because they lost. And these foreign governments, Britain, was going to start knocking on their door or had already started knocking on their door saying, you owe us money. Now, none of these southern states were allowed to ratify the 14th Amendment. I want to make this clear here. They were not a part of the Union. Even though, and see, this is the problem people have, is that the southern states, as they started seceding, as the secession letters came in, Lincoln basically started rejecting them. And as a matter of fact, he ended up dismissing Congress. He has no constitutional authority to do this. So all of the states that actually joined the Confederacy, many of them never actually submitted their secession letter. They just withdrew their representation in the Senate and in the House of Representatives and adjoined to the Confederacy. They left the Union. In so doing, they closed the door behind them. Maintaining representation would have kept them in the Union and fighting and interposing, but they seceded. Instead of what they should have done was they should have interposed and they should have tried to fight back. But the problem was that at that point in time, the courts and everything else were working against them. So the courts prior to the Civil War, the courts and the federal government was absolutely in their pocket. The Missouri Compromise was because they had enough influence or affluence with the federal government. This continued and continued until the early 30s when the tariffs started hitting them. And this is when, even though there were racists that were a part of the federal courts, they actually started taking sides in supporting the division. And I think that the courts weren't doing this for the right reason. They were trying to destroy America. There's a good, and I believe the likelihood is, that British operatives were already seated in the courts trying to destroy the Republic. And so when you kind of look at how, you know, because it's not like they were doing things that were really benefiting the Republic. They were actually trying to help create division so that the states would split and actually make us far more vulnerable against Britain and the rest of the world. Because a house divided cannot stand, and that's one of the things that Lincoln stated. But that's common knowledge. Lincoln wasn't some brilliant man in stating that. We've always heard, united we stand, divided we fall. That's where he got that. It's a bottom line. When you look at the 17th Amendment and how it was being ratified, when these three states actually tried to take those back and the federal government didn't allow that, then it was done. Now, every state ended up having to either join, because those states didn't have to join the Union. They could have maintained autonomy, but they would have had to answer to Britain to do that. And they realized it was in their benefit to actually join back to the Union so that they wouldn't be accountable to Britain in paying that debt. Read Section 4 of the 14th Amendment. Now, We're talking about the ratification of the 17th Amendment. I meant the 14th Amendment. Now, when we go into the 17th Amendment, see, they actually held the door shut on the 14th Amendment. The 17th Amendment, because the progressives believe that they're untouchable. You hear me say this a couple times already today. They think they're untouchable. They opened a door, and that door has to swing both ways. In other words, if a state actually rescinded their rejection and formally ratified the 17th Amendment, that means the states that ratified it can equally rescind their position and reject the 17th Amendment. Now, more importantly, the 17th Amendment is a direct violation to the Constitution. Why and how? Because the Senate no longer offers the equal suffrage of the states in the Senate. In other words, they don't even listen to the state legislatures. They do everything that the globalists tell them to do. Read Article 5 and the very last sentence, the very last clause of the Article 5. That is where no state can lose its equal representation in the Senate without their consent. Now, you show me, even though the states may have ratified the 17th Amendment, you show me in the 17th Amendment where they are actually giving consent to not have representation. Go read the dialogue of the 17th Amendment. It was just changing the manner in how senators were chosen. Which means that we can act, because the 17th Amendment is completely perverted and they're doing things that they shouldn't, they have cause to actually undo that so that they go back to appointing to where now he who pays the piper calls the tunes. In other words, the state legislature, as they go back to appointing their senators, those senators will be beholden to them, because right now the Senate only believes they're beholden to the globalists and the billions of dollars that go into their campaign races and into their pockets. And so, folks, this is how our whole, and when we come back next Friday, I'll also cover the First Amendment and how that is a part of the offensive. We'll wrap up on the 17th and the 14th Amendment, because I'll give you what states and the order and all of that. So I'll be prepared to go into those details. Forgive me for not having that ready. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And folks, there's a lot of stuff to go through, and sometimes I can't have everything, but forgive me. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.